not backing down. This girl is on fire. This girl is on fire. We're walking on fire. These girls are on fire. Put your hands in the air.
Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. The Republican health care plan endorsed by Donald Trump to overhaul Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was reviewed by the Nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, CBO. It found that 14 million people would lose health coverage next year under the plan, and within 10 years, 24 million would lose coverage. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price admitted he had not read the full report at a news conference today, and then he disputed the numbers.
It's just not believable, is what we would suggest. And we'll look at the numbers and see.
Criticizing the Congressional Budget Office report, Price said the CBO looked at a portion of their plan, but not the entire plan, which isn't out yet.
Apparently what CBO looked at was simply the bill that's pending before Congress. It didn't look at the regulatory reforms that we're going to put into place. It didn't look at the state innovation grants. It didn't look at the flexibility that we're going to allow the states, because that's what the states are demanding and asking for so that they can care for their most vulnerable population. And it didn't look at all of the pieces of legislation that are also pending out there that we call on our friends on the other side of the aisle to help us reform the insurance market so that we can provide for greater choices and greater competition.
Meanwhile, the House top Democrat Nancy Pelosi said the Republican plan to replace Obamacare is reckless, very, very cruel. It must be stopped. She takes issue with Speaker Paul Ryan, who called the plan an act of mercy.
I don't know if he thinks it's an act of mercy to all the people who will lose coverage, to people who will lose jobs, to the hospitals that may have to close down, especially in rural areas. I don't know if he thinks it's an act of mercy to people on opioid addiction and other addictions who are looking to Medicaid as an answer, as many of Republican governors have spoken to. This is, okay, so they're taking 24 million people, pushing them off their coverage. And as they do so, they are implementing the biggest transfer of wealth in our history, $600 billion going from working families to the richest people and corporations in our country. So in terms of insurance coverage, it's immoral. In terms of giving money to the rich at the expense of working families, it is indecent and wrong. This bill is very bad. They're confused, the Republicans, right now. Some of them are saying, discrediting the CBO, and others are glorifying pushing 24 million people off of coverage. So I hope that they would pull the bill. It's really the only decent thing to do. Numbers are important. They see the numbers. They should know how that transfers into people's lives. They are finding that out from their constituents. How can they look their constituents in the eye when they say to them, 24 million of you are no longer to have coverage?
Pelosi says Republicans are confused. Some of them are discrediting the CBO, and others are glorifying pushing off 24 million from coverage. She's hoping they will pull the bill. The Congressional Budget Office analysis of the Republican health care plan is giving more pragmatic Republicans pause. The bill is headed for the House Budget Committee, but it is unlikely the bill will pass through Congress in its current form. In other news, Marine General Robert Neller testified at a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing today. It was on allegations that service members posted nude photos of their colleagues to a large private Facebook group, that the photos were shared and lewd or threatening comments were made about them. The Navy Commandant said he intends to fix the problem, but Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen from New Hampshire says military leaders have vowed to correct sexual abuse and harassment problems before, and they haven't done so yet. She was one of several angry and skeptical U.S. senators saying the military hasn't done enough. Here's Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York addressing the Marine Corps Commandant, General Robert Neller.
General Neller, the military the Marines have been aware of online victimization, online exploitation of other Marines since 2013, because there's a letter here from Jackie Spears to Chuck Hagel and General Amos with screenshots. So there's no mystery that this has been going on for a very long time. It was right in front of you and the command to do something about since 2013. We have countless victims who have come forward, and they're not just being harassed online. Once their name, face, where they're stationed is posted, do you think the harassment ends online? It doesn't. I spoke to a civilian yesterday who has been continued to be harassed in her community because her ex-boyfriend exploited her online. So I have to say, when you say to us, it's got to be different, that rings hollow. I don't know what you mean when you say that. Why does it have to be different? Because you all of a sudden feel that it has to be different? Who has been held accountable? I very much align myself with Senator Fisher's comments. Who has been held responsible? Have you actually investigated and found guilty anybody? If we can't crack Facebook, how are we supposed to be able to confront Russian aggression and cyber hacking throughout our military? It is a serious problem when we have members of our military denigrating female Marines who will give their life to this country in the way they have, with no response from leadership. I can tell you, your answers today are unsatisfactory. They do not go far enough. And I would like you to know, what do you intend to do to the commanders who are responsible for good order and discipline? All of this behavior is in violation of Article 120 and Article 34, as so stated. They are violating the code of criminal justice. Why are commanders who have asked for all responsibility to deal with sexual assault and these behaviors for the 5 years this committee has been focused on this issue? You have demanded that you maintain control of all these issues. But where's the accountability for failure? Who is being held accountable for doing nothing since 2013? Who? Which commander? I am very concerned that this is part of a culture that is resulting in the high levels of sexual assault. We know from the FY14 SAPRO report that 60% of men and 58% of women who experienced sexual harassment or gender discrimination in the previous year throughout all the services indicated that a supervisor or unit leader was one of the people engaged in the violations. That is a problem with our command. So if you're dedicated to fixing the culture of the Marines and all the services, what do you plan to do to hold commanders responsible who fail to get this done?
Senator, I understand and share your concern. If I were aware, I would expect that any commander was aware if someone was reported any allegation of anything, but particularly something as serious as sexual assault, and the chain of command didn't do anything, that commander would be held accountable. I don't have any statistics for you on that. I can tell you that of all those individuals who have come forward with allegations of sexual assault, what's happened to individuals that the charges ended up with some sort of process and ended up with an adjudication. But those are just numbers. As you clearly and rightfully state, this is a problem with our culture. And I'm still in the process. I mean, I don't have a good answer for you. I'm not going to sit here and duck around this thing. I'm not. I'm responsible. I'm the commandant. I own this. And we are going to have to, you know, you've heard it before, but we're going to have to change how we see ourselves and how we treat each other. That's a lame answer, but ma'am, that's the best I can tell you right now. We've got to change, and that's on me.
My time's expired.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand questioning Navy Commandant Robert Neller at a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing into postings to a large private Facebook group. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. New York and North Carolina are the last states that still prosecute all 16 and 17-year-olds as adults in criminal court. Both states are considering high-profile proposals this year to raise the age of criminal responsibility to 18. Backers say the measures could save millions of dollars by providing rehabilitative services young people need to keep from offending again. Last night, Governor Andrew Cuomo said he looks forward to signing the bill to raise the age, but it has to get through the state Senate, which he says opposes the bill because politicians don't want to look soft on crime.
The reality of putting a 16 or 17-year-old in the same facility as hardened adult criminals is on its face cruel and inhuman. We know what happens. 16 and 17-year-olds are 5 times more likely to be sexually assaulted, 2 times more likely to be assaulted by staff, 36 more times likely to commit suicide. And if it couldn't be any worse, 34% more likely to be recidivists than if they had gone to a juvenile facility. It is the story that you heard from Jim and Robert. A juvenile facility provides the support services, treats them as an adolescent, gives them the help they need to turn their lives around. You go to a jail or a prison with no services, every lesson you learn is bad. And your ability to turn your life around is set back and certainly not moved forward. And not only is it cruel, it's unnecessary. 86% of the 25,000 16 and 17-year-olds incarcerated have been accused of committing nonviolent crimes. These are not violent, hardened criminals. There is no way to treat them that way.
Andrew Cuomo speaking at Central Synagogue in Manhattan. He says the Rikers prison complex needs to be closed. It's a city prison, not under the governor's jurisdiction, but he says Rikers is savage, inhumane, and revolting.
7,000 inmates are held. Many of them 16 and 17, many of them waiting for years just to have their day in court, and many of them subject to being beaten, raped, or even killed. The facts on Rikers Island are these. 80% of the people on Rikers Island haven't been found guilty of anything. They're waiting for their day in court. 80%. And while they're there, the abuse, the assault is unbelievable. And just over the past year, 246 assaults by staff, 1,400 inmate-on-inmate assaults.
And the governor said political will is what's preventing Rikers from being closed.
Now, many have called on New York City to close Rikers Island and to open smaller facilities that are more manageable, the same way we've done with large housing projects that showed they were too large to manage and we broke them into smaller housing projects, the same thing we've done with our public education system, taking big schools and breaking them into small schools. A jail that is 7,000 people is too hard to manage. So people have said to the city, let's have smaller jails that are manageable. The city to date has said they can't do it. It's too hard. Well, you know what? Impotence is not a defense for me. And New York City, New York City can accomplish anything it wants to. When it wants to, it just needs the political will. And it is an outrage in New York City to allow a Rikers Island to exist, knowing what's going on there.
Governor Andrew Cuomo speaking at Central Synagogue in Manhattan last night. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Gotham Gazette's Ben Max takes a look at what else is happening this week in New York politics. Ben?
It's already been a busy week in New York politics, and though a lot of things have paused for the snow on Tuesday, there's a lot more coming Wednesday through Friday as we're in key budget season, and there's a whole lot more going on as it's also an election year in New York City. Mayor de Blasio's been all over the city and Governor Cuomo all over the state on Tuesday assessing the snowstorm and the situation on the ground in various points. But even before that, on Monday, Mayor de Blasio unveiled a long-awaited plan to battle the opioid addiction crisis in New York City. The mayor and his team promised an effort to reduce opioid overdose deaths by 35% over the next 5 years. In 2016, well over 1,000 people in New York City died via drug overdose, which involved an opioid, the highest number on record. Meanwhile, there were fewer than 340 murders in New York City in 2016. While de Blasio was focused on that new plan, he also fielded questions from reporters about the firing of U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara over the weekend by the Trump administration. Bharara's office is engaged in a year-long investigation into the mayor and his associates, which many believe is wrapping up soon. De Blasio had no comment, citing the ongoing investigation. Meanwhile, in New York City this week, there's a variety of city council budget hearings on the mayor's preliminary budget. That process continues to move through, and there are a variety of hearings on Wednesday and Thursday. There were some scheduled for Tuesday that are being rescheduled for other dates coming up. And in Albany, the state budget process, which has a closer deadline of April 1st, the city budget isn't due until July 1st, the two houses of the state legislature are passing their one-house budgets this week, which signals the final stages of budget negotiations. The state assembly, which is controlled by Democrats, and the state senate, which is controlled by Republicans, are releasing their one-house budgets, and then they start negotiations between their leaders and Governor Cuomo. As we move forward this week, there'll be both behind-the-scenes and public negotiations, both in the city and the state, around the budgets, as well as other political maneuvering. There's a variety of one-off events being held in the city this week, including several interesting policy-focused events that we have a rundown for you at Gotham Gazette. But also this week, it's important to watch as the mayor has another town hall scheduled for Wednesday night in Manhattan. The mayor has been traveling the city holding town hall meetings and fielding questions from local residents. Last week, the mayor was in Brooklyn in Bedford-Stuyvesant and fielded questions there. Tomorrow night, on Wednesday, he'll be in Chelsea with City Councilmember Corey Johnson, fielding questions from constituents about all sorts of local neighborhood needs and citywide issues. Also Wednesday evening, the New York City Bar Association is holding an event to discuss the coming question that will be on the ballot this November about whether New York should hold a constitutional convention. And on Thursday, the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School will host a panel event on Governor Cuomo's proposal for free college tuition for middle-class families making up to $125,000 a year. Both promise to be interesting discussions, and we have all the details at Gotham Gazette and a full rundown of other events to watch this week. For WBAI, this is Ben Max.
In other news, for 8 years, Exxon's Rex Tillerson, the former chair and chief executive of Exxon, U.S. Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson used a shadow email under the alias Wayne Tracker to discuss global warming and its risks to Exxon's business, according to New York's Attorney General. WBAI's Rebecca Miles has more.
According to the investigators for New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, the company concealed the shadow emails despite a 2015 subpoena for Tillerson's communications issued as part of a sweeping investigation of the oil giant in connection with possible financial fraud. Tillerson, whose middle name is Wayne, used an email address on the Exxon system under the pseudonym Wayne Tracker for at least 2008 through to 2015, investigators say. The company has turned over a handful of emails, but New York authorities believe a much larger trove exists. The accusations come amid heated and drawn-out court battles between Exxon and Schneiderman and Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, who are both investigating whether the company misled investigators for years about the possible impact of climate change on its business. Their probe followed an 8-month investigation by Inside Climate News, who found extensive concern within the company about the risks of global warming dating back nearly 40 years. The evidence was drawn from internal Exxon documents showing the company understood that climate change posed catastrophic risks for people if nothing was done to control pollution from fossil fuels. It was also aware of material risks to the company if the use of fossil fuels had to be limited. Investigators became suspicious in the last several days that Exxon wasn't telling them everything when they came across a reference to the Wayne Tracker email account buried in 60 of the 415,000 documents Exxon had turned over. Investigators also say 34 other email accounts assigned to top Exxon executives, board members, or their assistants also exist but have not been turned over, according to the letter. The Tillerson emails, as well as those from the other Exxon executives, are relevant. Snyderman's investigators say because they have made multiple representations of potentially false or misleading statements to investors and the public. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And finally, the International Working Women's Day Coalition gathered this weekend to strategize and stand in solidarity with women-led movements around the world. Dominique Jack reports.
It is our duty to fight.
It is our duty to fight.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
Yellow auditorium walls were transformed with powerful signs, reading support for women of color, Native, immigrant, queer, and trans women. Activists specializing in various areas of civil rights and environmental issues spoke powerfully about their struggles for justice. WBAI's own Dikwi Kione Siddiqui spoke against police brutality and torture of political war prisoners. She says the roundtable helps women learn more about intersectionality in activism.
Oppression manifests differently in particular communities. It's still oppression. And so we unite on the basis of a shared oppression that's manifested differently in particular communities.
Members of the Filipino rights group Gabriela formed the band Mother Tongue. Their song, I Vow to End Violence Against Women. Monica Moorhead, one of the organizers of the Roundtable Talk and 2016 presidential candidate for the Workers' World Party, says she hopes the day's events will call more people to action.
What International Women's Day really means is for us to come together to strategize. For so many of us, you know, we're struggling on all different fronts. And there's so much pressure and there's so much, you know, going on, you know, on these different fronts that it can really consume you. It can really occupy a lot of your time. So it's good for us to come together in this type of space to use International Women's Day, not just to talk about it historically, which is important because a lot of people don't even know what International Women's Day is all about, but to use this day as a day to come together to assess where we're at with the different struggles and how we can continue to work together to build unity and solidarity with each other. And to figure out what are the unifying points that we can, you know, agree on.
This is the 12th year for the annual event and is organized by the International Working Women's Day Coalition. Dominique Jack, WBAI News, New York.
And we gotta grow.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. The news was produced with Rebecca Miles, Ben Max, Dominique Jack, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
When they go low, we go high. When they say no, we say it's all right. When they go low, we go high. When they say no, we say it's alright. We say it's alright. 'Cause we gotta grow. The pain may be hard, but we'll claim it as ours. 'Cause we gotta show. They'll try to tear us apart, but they can't take our hearts, no. 'Cause we gotta grow.